SiriusXM Sports presents At the Races with Steve Bick. Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
A very good Wednesday, race fans. Sirius 219 XM 201 Sports Zone 964. If you're listening to Sirius XM online and at our website too, SteveBick.com. Just as predicted and expected, some wet weather overnight, more than we certainly were hoping for, at least till now. It's going to clear up and it's going to be a clear path to Saturday and the Travers, the 149th running. And the field came together last night at the Adelphi. And we were busy here. We had a couple of dozen people, and including one attendee that managed to get to both, Seth Merrow. Wait till we talk to Seth later. I was delighted to finally get Seth to come to the house. We've invited him a million times, and finally got him here. I'm sure we'll get a report on how things went over there at the rebuilt, the gorgeous, remade Adelphi Hotel. Really the last of the Grand Dams on Broadway. Now they redid the Rip Van Dam, but it's a little different. It's not really, you know, what a really the hotel. It's got offices and whatever else. But the Field of 11 that will greet you on Saturday from the rail. A trigger warning, 30 to 1. Wonder Godot, 5 to 1. Gronkowski saves ground in this spot, and 4 to 1. Second choice. In fact, the Chad pair, the first two choices. Bravazo from the 4, 12 to 1. Vino Rosso from the 5, 10 to 1. Meistermind, 30 to 1. Longest shot on the board. King Zachary, 15 to 1. Dale Romans, and in the 7 hole. The 8, Mendelssohn, 12 to 1. Good Magic, your favorite. The 9 hole. Can survey things from there on the pass by the stands. 2 to 1 favorite. Tenfold, who developed late and feels like a horse that will get, you know, some attention between now and Saturday afternoon, 8 to 1. And Catholic Boy draws the 11 hole and is 8 to 1. So a robust field. And, of course, think about that field and add Hofberg in there. If he had not gotten a little spike, that little fever, as good a group as it is, just Hofberg missing. I'm sure some people would say that, oh, you know, the Triple Crown winner's missing, but obviously this should be a field that satisfies players and got, you know, you got everything you need in here. You got some pace. You know, the interesting decision for Catholic Boy is going to be, you know, how aggressively ridden he'll have to be, because he does feel like, to some degree, along with Trigger Warning from the rail, Trigger Warning is going to want to go. So the two bookends, inside, outside, it's really the first time I've started to think about how they're going to spill out of the gate. That would feel like the likely scenario. Wonder Godot, the little forward, Arad Ortiz, not going to, you know, certainly from the two-hole, going to be able to save ground. She probably benefits pretty well from that draw. She's not going to have to worry, because Trigger Warning is going to go. so clears the rail, and Gronkowski's going to drop out of it a little bit, right? King Zachary is kind of a mid-pack stalker. Meistermind is a mid-pack type. Bravazo, right behind, probably want to set up behind the leaders. Big question is what's going to do with Vino Rosso and how he decides. I guess it's as much up to him as anything, it seems. Certainly based on that Jim Dandy, if he's going to dawdle and fall behind, or can he be aggressively ridden by Johnny and try to at least stay in contact with this field, because there's not, as opposed to what we saw in the Alabama Saturday, there isn't as many players interested in the front end. Mendelsohn will be an interesting decision. Was fairly close up in the Dwyer. Is that what they're going to want to do? And Good Magic, I think Good Magic, it'll be interesting to see what Jose Ortiz does. You would think that he's going to at least extend, at least early, past the stand. You would think that he's going to want to, Jose will float Catholic boy and keep him out as far out into the track as possible before settling in. I would think that Good Magic sets up shop second, third, and then at some point lets Catholic boy go confront Trigger Warning and sits a very nice up close third behind those leaders. So that, nothing wrong with that draw of nine, actually, for Good Magic at all. And somebody, if nobody wants to engage early, this is Good Magic's race to lose. It might have been anyway. Feels like the horses that want to come from off are a little up against it. And you may see some middle moves, some moves before the turn. This is interesting. And we'll have plenty of opportunity between now and Friday to discuss. Pete Fornatel, join us first after the first timeout. I promised yesterday that Brandon McFarlane was going to visit, and I'm looking forward to this. And he came into town on Friday and won the Skidmore, the two-year-old chattel, and won well. And, Kendrick Carmouche has very quietly managed to very regularly pick up some mounts like this and some wins like this. And he's had a good meet. Carmouche is a valuable asset regularly in New York, because he's not a guy that'll just spill out of the gate. He's a guy that wants to engage. And of course, at the beginning of the meet, we talked quite a bit about Ricardo Santana and his aggressive tactics, and how welcome it is, because it shakes up everybody else. It makes them get going and not snatch and grab, as Andy likes to say and infer. So Carmouche has been good. Carmouche also, let's be honest, there's a few times when you watch Carmouche, and there's some owners out there that say, he wasn't aggressive with my horse. I'm not sure what he was doing, what he was thinking. And I know there's some owners that are laughing, and trainers that that have said to him, what was that? Well, okay, Kendrick. Next time, boss. Yeah. So, pretty funny. Travers, just the highlight of what is going to be a tremendous card. The rest of it will come together this afternoon in the racing office. We'll get that as soon as that overnight pops up. And certainly Dave Grenning will keep everybody apprised of how the fields are coming together. And we know that, you know, once we get this weather out of here, it's going to be a nice Travers weekend. Right now, they're speaking of today because we do have, of course, a two-day carryover, 166,000 coming into today. And for now, they're holding the MTOs. No decision yet. And as I say that, no sooner do I say that do I get a text. Third, fourth, and sixth. Here's the official word. Third, fourth, and sixth have come off the turf. So only one race in the pick six sequence is off the turf, which is good. That leaves the rest of that sequence unperturbed, and we'll talk about it with Seth and go through those. I've been waiting to write things up. The sixth was a 50,000 non-winners of three going a mile and a 16th. So this, with the older horses, this will stretch out to a mile and an eighth on the main track. The third and the fourth, you got two-year-olds in the third. They're going to go five and a half. And the fourth race, which is somehow, there it is, mile and an eighth already on the grass for older maidens. So mile and an eighth on the dirt. All right. And the John's Call stays on the turf, which is good because that was a nice group. And in terms of MTOs today, two MTOs in the sixth, two MTOs in the fourth, and quite a few horses actually in that fourth probably will stay in. And three MTOs in the third. So the card is pretty much unaffected. John's Call is gonna be fun. I'm looking forward to talking about that, see what Seth's gonna do. I'm curious. Highland Sky for me, the horse to beat. But Rocketry for a red hot Jimmy Jerkins, Call Provision, who's a good hard hitter. There's a couple of prices that, I mean, those are Highland Sky 4-1, Rocketry 5-1, Call Provision 3-1. I don't know. McPeak, was it me or did Kenny McPeak on Monday seem a little ambivalent about Harlan Strong? It looks like he fits in there okay. And a crazy morning line on Mr. Maybe, 30-1 is a little silly. He's not going to be 30-1. So, nice group of 12 in the John's Call. Got to figure the turf. Call the turf. The difference is I don't know how much it rained here versus how much it rained in Saratoga. I know that actually when our friends the Friedbergs got here, they said that it was raining in Saratoga already. That was at about 5 o'clock, actually. So I'm going to say the turf will be yielding as opposed to good. It had gotten firm, so on Monday. So the John's Call stays on the grass. And of course, the hurdle race, the Walsh, that starts the card. There it is. Brandon McFarlane. Pete Fornatel. Sid Fernando will be in. We've got the Travers from a pedigree perspective, Curlin with over a third of the field. Sons of Curlin. Very nice. For John Secura and team. We'll get a perspective from Sid. And more. Take a break. Pete Fornatel joins us. See what he's got planned for Travers Week. At the races. Back after this.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
Join us at Presque Isle Downs for our two biggest days of racing. Sunday, September 16th, the $200,000 Presque Isle Mile. Monday, September 17th, the Grade 2 $400,000 Presque Isle Masters. North America's top filly and mare sprinters compete in the Premier Breeders' Cup Prep Race. Free Presque Isle Masters hats for the first 1,000 fans. Free t-shirts each night for the first 500 fans. September 16th and 17th, Presque Isle Downs, Erie, Pennsylvania. For more, go to PresqueIsleDowns.com.
Why is accreditation important in aftercare? The Thoroughbred Aftercare Alliance's standard of accreditation and grant process provide donors with confidence that their contributions are allocated in the most effective manner. TAA accreditation is only awarded after a complete review of an organization. Aftercare cannot be an afterthought for the industry. To learn more or support the TAA's mission, visit thoroughbredaftercare.org.
Do you want unlimited access to handicapping without exorbitant prices? Then BrizNet.com has you covered with a variety of plans for past performances, pedigree, and raw data. The BrizNet.com Performance Plan offers unlimited PDF past performances for just $75 per month and is available at BrizNet.com/PP. American Produce Records Online puts the pedigrees of nearly 1 million dams and more than 2 million foals at your fingertips, plus sire stats for only $275 per year, and is available at BrizNet.com/APR. The BrizNet.com data plan offers unlimited access to race day data files, perfect for handicappers with their own database or to plug into other people's programs. The data plan is just $125 per month. Visit BrizNet.com for all this information and more, and discover why BrizNet.com is the handicapper's edge.
Porchbills.com is a cost-effective, time-saving paperless revolution. Vendors are able to generate electronic invoices for owners and other vendors who can pay through Horsebills.com for just 50 cents. Turn hours of work into minutes with our easy-to-use site. Have our team take over your bookkeeping or continue to do it yourself and pay only our low monthly subscription fee. Check out our video tutorial on the Horsebills.com YouTube channel and get started today for free. Horsebills.com. Toll-free number 888-938-4643.
Now, back to At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
I go out walking after midnight, out in the moonlight, just like we used to do. I'm always walking after midnight, searching for you. I walk for miles along the highway. Well, that's just my way of saying I love you. I'm always walking after midnight, searching for you.
We're back at the races, coming up on 20 into Wednesday, and officially last night about 6 o'clock with the draw for the Travers. Travers Week in full swing, and certainly Pete Fornatel looming boldly, as he does, over Travers Week. Good morning.
Good morning. You always enjoy a rock and roll Patsy Cline cover to get the day going, Steve. That's good stuff.
Girl in a coma and out of San Antonio. They're tremendous. I love them.
Cool.
Well, Pete, we have just this. Ideally, this will be our last inclement morning, and from here on in, we're at least clear through Travers, and this is always the highlight. And no matter how many days they tack on to this meet, this is always the highlight. And everybody, a lot of people come in from now through Labor Day, or this is the end of their their last week maybe at Saratoga. Some thoughts coming into the week.
Well, I'm very excited. I zipped down to the city for a few days. I've got taken Perrin to a Broadway matinee today, if you can believe it. Just the way our family schedules worked out this week for me not to be there for the beginning of Travers Week, but very excited to be heading back up later in the week and settling in for what's become one of the great cards of the year. I mean, outside of the Breeders' Cup, I can't think of a day I look forward to more in terms of racing, even as great as the Belmont sort of stakes festival is. There's something magic about this Travers Day, the way it's evolved over the last few years. And as you said, it's always been the centerpiece of the meet, but never more so than in the last few years. And I feel like, and I don't want to jinx it, because I know what you're saying about the weather and the way that the weather's been, but I feel like we're going to maybe get the double reward this year of finally the weather that we deserve along with the racing that we deserve, and just going to have a fantastic rest of the meet. And I'm looking forward to this little pause. It's been a little bit of wagering pain for me, Steve, but I'm not too worried about it. A couple days off, going to come back strong, roll into town, looking forward to seeing a lot of great friends and racing contacts, everybody who's going to be hanging around Saratoga as a whole and the paddock bar specifically to kick this Travers into high gear and to ride out the rest of this meet in a little bit of style. That's the plan anyway.
Well, looking forward very much to the rest of that card coming together. And, of course, today we've got, now that the decisions have been made on the turf, we've got just the sixth off in the sequence. The eighth and ninth stay on, the John's Call, as well as a nice New York bred second level allowance. Pete, any early interest in a Travers horse that you've been following? Anything that after last night's assembly?
I think more than usual, just because it's such an interesting handicapping puzzle, the draw is going to be of interest. I haven't really sat down and studied it much, but the horse that I keep coming back to in my head, and I got to figure out how I think this is going to trip out for him, but I'm very interested in Catholic Boy. He's so tough. I think he's going to be a square price. You got a lot of horses who kind of have to take money in here, all of whom are live, but I don't necessarily think are going to be great value at the prices that they are. I mean, Good Magic could run off the screen. He's so talented, but I think he probably goes shorter than that 2-1 morning line. I think Wonder Godot is going to take a ton of money, very talented. Win would be no surprise. I still am waiting to figure out. I want to see a little bit more about who Gronkowski is before I'm willing to take sub 6-1 on him. I didn't love the Dandy as a race, so I'm zeroing in either on Catholic Boy or maybe trying to make a crazy case for something at very long odds. I'm a huge Mendelsohn fan. Even I think I have to watch one and see him get back on track before worrying about things. Though I will say, as a potential include, if the numbers just get absurd, I mean, the 12-1 morning line sounds about right, I could see him in the USA market getting so lost that maybe I go back for more punishment there. But I'm definitely looking for this to be one of those years where we can get a north of 6-1 Travers winner to hopefully build some things around. All that said, again, no disrespect to the horses at the lower end of the odds spectrum. They're all live. I just don't think any of them are for me this year.
Fair enough. Well, we've got a whole bunch of stakes, and I know some maiden races that'll be in there, and a couple of allowances. So, looking forward to being able to print out that probably 30, I'm going to guess 36 pages of of card.
Depends when, how many formulator notes you have. It could swell past 50.
I don't. You know, it's funny. I don't print the formulator PPs.
You do the PDF, and then you look at your notes on the computer. That's probably smart.
Well, I don't even do that. I notate on paper. I can't do it, Pete. I'm just not. Although the fact is that if Johnny D can make that transition, he's got it on the pad. I guess I could, but I'm going to go kicking and screaming.
I'm like you. I like to print. I like to. It helps me to have the paper in my hand, sort of before, during, and after the race. But I recognize that we're dinosaurs in this regard, and I look around and see Kinchin and Travis Stone and Nick Tamro and all these folks doing it in this modern way, and I kind of envy them. But I just something else is going to have to happen before I go the full digital route. I like the tactile. Especially for like going down to the paddock, it's nice just to have like a couple sheets of paper to scrawl on, as opposed to this like device I have to worry about leaving on the rail.
There you go. That's right. I hadn't thought of it that way, but I could see myself losing the thing three times a week, misplacing. You're right. I hadn't considered that. You're right. Although I've only ever lost one phone over the years, so I guess I'm more responsible than. And I'm letting on. Well, let's take a peek and get some tournament action covered and some winners. What do we miss?
Well, we've had a bunch of action on the DRF website. We had our final qualifiers for Monmouth. Folks listening who aren't going to make it to the Spa for Saturday, and I know you have a loyal New Jersey contingent of listeners, should definitely consider getting out to Monmouth on Saturday for this super qualifier that they're running. It's a little different than this new batch of super qualifiers I've been hearing about. This is basically a standard Monmouth contest, but just with an abundance of seats for both the National Horse Players Championship and the Breeders' Cup Betting Challenge. Two names, regulars on DRFT, won their way in. Pete Acasella and Sean Nolan. Nolan, somebody who's qualified for the NHC an incredible amount of times, will have a chance to do it again. That contest is just $500 per entry. If you can't make it to, you know, choice A, come to Saratoga with us. Choice B, go to Monmouth and play in that super qualifier. And then the other big win from last weekend, Lawrence Calden, who's a tournament veteran, won his seat for the Keeneland contest in October. So he'll be headed out to Keeneland. That's a big weekend and worth taking a look at, because you not only have the contest on Sunday, I believe it's the 14th? I'll look at that while we're talking. You not only have the contest on Sunday, but you have this new contest Keeneland has added the last few years on Saturday. So it really makes it worth a contest player's time to go to Keeneland that weekend, because you have two opportunities, not just one, to play. And yes, the Keeneland Challenge is October 14th, 2018, and then you've also got the other opportunity. And if you have never been to Keeneland, what are you waiting for? Definitely bucket list item for horse players, and they take really good care of the contest players. They're definitely worth checking out. There'll be more opportunities for that coming up on the DRF Tournaments website, which you can find at tournaments.drf.com.
Who were the personalities going back? I saw, I think on Monday, you popped something out.
Oh, I did write about those players. Calden is, he's somebody I really enjoy hanging out with. I've seen him, gotten to hang out with him at the NHC a bunch of times. His wife, Glory, also plays. She actually made the final table this year. But he's somebody who enjoys hanging out in the sports book and talking all things related to racing and handicapping and betting. And just a good vibes, good energy guy. So it's nice to see him there. I don't know. I've met Sean Nolan. I don't know him well, and I don't think I've ever had the pleasure of meeting Pete Acasella. He's somebody who's on my list to reach out to this week. Maybe I'll write a little profile of him on Friday that can be in the Sunday DRF that'll actually obviously come out on Travers Day. That one will get a lot of extra eyeballs on it, and I think from the amount of times I've seen him on leaderboards, he's going to be an interesting story.
Nice. Well, looking forward very much to these last 2 weeks. Kicks off today. 12 cards remain. We got 28 in the book, and at this point, if you had to summarize, you know, what do you have to do to close out what's been a good meet, Pete, or what do you have to do between now and Labor Day to recoup and salvage?
I think it's a good opportunity to do a little bit of extra work if you're not somebody who's in the habit of taking trip notes and bias notes all the way along. I have a feeling if you do a little bit of extra work and look for clues with all the weird weather and some of the odd racetracks we've had, to do a little bit of extra work trying to figure out which horses were maybe disadvantaged by what seemed at times like a boggy inside on the turf, and look for those horses coming back, or look for some horses making their second starts of the meet who were maybe a little short of fitness or going out for cold barns the first time, going to be having a better chance in their second starts of the meet. Just trying to think about the meet like in a holistic way as we approach these last 12 days and try to come up with some angles that aren't just there in the bare form. Use a little bit of extra creativity and imagination to try to find some places to make your stand and either keep the good times rolling or, as I'm attempting to do, get out and get up. There's still time. It only takes one. And with a card we have like the one on Saturday, there's probably not going to be a better opportunity to make a big hit the whole meet. It's historically been a good day for me, and I think it definitely rewards people willing to do that little bit of extra work and not just look at the paper, but dig back into those charts and watch those replays and try to come up with some stuff that maybe not everybody's going to see.
Well, and that reminds me to remind people what Duke Matisse talked about on television with us a week ago Sunday, which is the August 4th, 5th, 6th dead rail opportunity, and you know, to watch for horses running back, and you know, there's been just a couple these last 12 days. There's certainly going to be, you know, we're now coming up on 4 weeks for those, you know, it's 3 weeks plus going on four, so timing is right for those run backs.
Chance to put in a plug for that show, Steve. Can't folks find that and listen to it via the normal feed, not the normal At the Races feed where we can download all these shows as podcasts, but there's another way that can be accessed, isn't there?
They've got it's YouTube, Capital OTB.
Oh, beautiful.
Yeah, absolutely. They go to Capital OTB or do a loose on the lead search. There it is.
Anytime those guys speak, particularly to you, it's worth listening to, and there are going to be tidbits and information to be gleaned, and that sounds like one exactly like what I'm talking about. Very, very important, specific piece of information that you might have that might not be fully priced into the market.
Pete Fornatel, everybody, looms boldly. Pete, see you this week, and looking forward to closing out the meet in style.
I like it. If we get some good weather next week, maybe we can try to do it in person. Who knows?
There's been every time I've been poised to come and settle in, the weather has chased me right back into my office. It's all right,
though.
We'll
see if we can't get a little bit of luck.
Absolutely. That's all it takes. Pete Fornatel, looms boldly on Twitter, and, of course, the podcast that he and Jonathan churn out. And it's been a great season for Pete and for Jonathan after the premiere of the Horse Players Tour show, and waiting for any update that comes along as they merchandise and look for a green light. Certainly a green light for a young horseman getting going, and you win a race at Saratoga, exciting to see. Lacey Gaudette win up here. In fact, she's got a horse today. And that, you know, that's nice to win. You come up here and win a stake like Brandon McFarland did. That's worth a backpack and a hearty spotlight. Brandon's going to join us next. We'll talk about where he came from and his background, and then getting his hands on this horse, who really I made the point last week that was a, or with the TV on, I guess it was on Sunday, made the point that was a big mistake to overlook Chattel. Not gonna make that mistake again. Now that we have a chance to get to know Brandon. Back after this.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
The thoroughbred breeding industry will never be the same with the launch of Daily Racing Form's Buyer-Sire Performance Standings, presented by Darley. These groundbreaking ratings use buyer speed figures to measure a stallion's performance beyond wins and earnings, focusing on providing a measurement of a sire's true ability to produce high-quality horses. View the Buyer-Sire Performance Standings at drf.com/buyer-sire and get the true information that breeds results. That's drf.com/buyer-sire.
Are you on?
University of Arizona Racetrack Industry Program can prepare you for an exciting career in racing. Turn your passion into a paycheck. Nearly 90% of our students are employed in the racing industry immediately upon graduation. What career track are you on? The University of Arizona Racetrack Industry Program. Enroll today and get on track for success. For scholarship opportunities and more, check out our website at ua-rtip.org.
Hi, this is retired race caller Tom Durkin. So, after this year's Derby, I stopped by Top Round Roast Beef on Shelbyville Road in St. Matthews. I got two sandwiches, one for back at the hotel and another for the trip back home to New York. The first one was so good, I had the other one right there. Certified Angus beef, roasted 5 hours, each one made to order. You can taste the difference. Top Round Roast Beef, Shelbyville Road, St. Matthews. Tell them Tom Durkin sent you. Oh, by the way, try the frozen custard too.
Do you ever wonder what happens to your old friends, including the great champions that inspired unforgettable memories, and maybe even let you cash a ticket or two over the years? We even have a former child prodigy.
Here is a superstar. That horse's name is Afternoon Delights, and Kent DeSarmo and Afternoon Delights absolutely galloping in the Hollywood Futurities.
These are the champions that help out the horses that might not have won a Grade 1 race, but always tried just as hard. Come visit them all at Old Friends when you're in Kentucky, or at our Bobby Frankel division, Old Friends in Saratoga. I know they'll be glad to see you. Go to oldfriendsequine.org or call us at 502-863-1775.
Get started in Kentucky. Over $8 million in additional purse money is available at the five Kentucky tracks for horses eligible for the Kentucky Thoroughbred Development Fund. Kentucky is a good place to race your Kentucky bred. Come home to Kentucky and make a start.
Breaking down the biggest stories in the world of horse racing, this is At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
Feeling like a boss. Staring at the stars, it doesn't matter the cost, 'cause everybody wants to be famous. Some call the shots, so see you over a bar. It doesn't matter the cost, seems like everybody wants to be famous. I think it could be me.
We're back at the races. Easy to make yourself famous when you come into Saratoga, relatively unknown, and you win a stake, and then you leave with your horse, and you go back and set up and look for the next opportunity. And that's what Brandon McFarland did with Chattel on Friday, going back to the Skidmore and the two-year-old turf sprint stake. And there was really, he looked at the two races of that he'd run on turf, you know, going 5.5 and five. And he came to Belmont and broke his maiden. It's not like, you know, it's not like he was a complete obscurity. Brandon McFarland joins us. Congratulations.
Thank you.
Brandon, yeah. Before we figure out, you know, where the horse came from and talk about your owner, let's introduce you and talk about yourself, and don't be shy.
So I'm actually basically the opposite of most horse trainers, how I got into the game. I went to college, I graduated, and, I used to follow racing every day, very close. I used to come out, I'd stay all day just watching replays, watch racing, this, you know. So I was hanging out the track, and I met a lot of connections that way. I actually helped Frank Caroli do morning line odds for 7 years. They would bring me out on all the big days, and, just because I knew all the horses throughout the country. And, you know, I would do morning line for Preakness, Day Before Preakness, Merrill Million, that kind of stuff. And I actually, you know, met some trainers, and one, you know, my good friend Kovitsky, Dane Kovitsky, I used to give him horses to claim, you know, help him with claims, you know, because I followed it so close. And one day he just goes, "Hey, you want to come work for me?" And that's how it all started.
Unbelievable. I knew there had to be, you know, somebody savvy behind Caroli. That.
Yeah. We had a brain set up back there.
I love it. And of course, Frank in Vegas.
And, oh yeah, he texted me right after the race.
He had to be thrilled.
Oh yeah.
How many? You know how many owners? I mean, how did talk to setting yourself up and, you know, bringing people in and starting the business from that side?
Yeah, well, I've known. Well, my dad has a few horses. He had two. Wayne Potts at the time. And so finally, well, I came back to Maryland after I quit with Dane, and right away I was playing softball on the track, and I tore my ACL. So that set me back a couple months. So, you know, I was kind of doing that, and then, I just kind of talked to a couple guys, and one of my dad's friend had horses, you know, a few horses, and, you know, he's the one, Narrowly Farm, David Baxter, who gave me, you know, my first two horses, basically.
Nice. And this horse, let's get into Chattel and, you know, how he came to you and a modest purchase going back to last fall.
Yeah, so he was sold, I guess, as a yearling, for $2,000, and Webb Carroll bought him. He was at Webb Carroll. Travis down at Webb Carroll, he's had him. And, you know, so actually my owner has another baby down at the training center, and he went down to check out his other horse, and he must have been watching this horse work. And Travis says, "The horse is for sale." And he was kind of like, well, you know, his breeding wasn't exactly the greatest. It wasn't, you know. But he looked, you know, he must have liked them, and he looked quick. So he ended up buying them down there from him. So that's how he got them.
You talk about the pedigree, and it's kind of Giant Oak was a personal favorite. And we used to talk regularly with Chris Block about him. He died young, and unfortunately.
Yeah.
The dam side, I don't know the last time I saw a Richter scale mare in a pedigree.
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely, he had called his agent and told him to look at the horse, you know, look at pedigree, and he was like, well, I wouldn't really take a shot with the horse. But so yeah, it's not exactly bred for, you know, you know, for turf and for distance and all, but, I mean, he definitely wants to run.
Well, it's a winless. The dam was winless, although she did hit the board 4 out of 5 starts, and she ran on some synthetic, and she
was
sprinted.
She was California. Yeah, so she was a California. Yeah, she never even won. But, I mean, I kind of just, after his maiden race, his first race, you know, he was just so green. It was at Belmont, and Trevor rode him, you know, gave him a good ride. But he just was so green that Trevor said he would have won by a pole if he just stayed straight. And he just was lugging in, just looking at everything. And that's what happened the first start.
You then came up to Belmont and or put him on the turf. And
yeah.
what was the motivation there?
Just because I look at their strides real close in the morning, and it's just the slightest bit seemed like he was climbing on the dirt. He took to it for sure, but just kind of like his stride just to me kind of seemed like he wanted to try the turf. That's the main reason, honestly.
And ran a bang up race. Yeah, and you had to be very satisfied. Earned a nice figure for a spring 2 year old too.
He ran a 70-72 buyer in that race, and if you watch the race, he actually dueled with two horses: Wesley's Gins and Tens and another horse. And put them both away, and yes, the one that we just ran against had a perfect trip that day, and for some reason the other day, in the paddock and everybody talking, they all loved Yes and Yes, but not one person even mentioned our name. That's funny.
That's part of the benefit of obscure,
Obscure
connections, and you add in that pedigree. This is one of my favorite stories all the time, which is college, either veterinarian programs or agricultural science programs, and the breeding. And this is a University of Kentucky bred, and there's several West Virginia breeds, and we see. All on a pretty regular basis. It's amazing, actually, how many they don't necessarily work hard at being commercial, but it is notable how many of these programs have produced nice horses.
I guess they do all their studying, and they do different formulas to figure out who to breed with and all that kind of stuff, I assume.
Yeah, it's a project, and then they, if they bring one, if they can bring one to market, they will. And part of the story is how they probably got their hands on this mare to begin with, and then. What took place from there? You went back to the dirt, and you went down to Delaware. One of the benefits, of course, of being based at Laurel, you can go in any direction. You can go to Philly, you can go to Penn National, Charlestown, up to New York, Maryland, any option.
Oh, yeah, there's a ton of options. And honestly, the thinking behind that was after he had run second, we knew he had a decent, we knew he could run. And honestly, we went up there for an easy win. Like, we were hoping, and then point to that stake. So when he got up to Delaware, he stumbled to the start right out of gate. Stumbled to start and never, not even at any point, picked up his feet like on that surface. He hated the surface. He was just climbing the whole time. Never could run. I mean, he ran third just because of his talent, but he did not like it one bit.
No, you went right back to the turf at Laurel, 5.5, and here you break your maiden, and this time you were 70 cents on the dollar.
Yeah, they bet us that day. Well, the Delaware race was Claudio Gonzalez had a horse who was a really nice horse. I think his name is Tybalt. He's the Delaware, and he came back and ran a good second in the Monmouth Stakes about maybe 2 weeks ago. It was 100,000 in Monmouth, and he broke dead last and still ran second, I think, at 6-5. So it definitely was a good field, and they were betting, you know, I was kind of surprised that we got bet to 3-5 because I know Jenkins had one that they really liked that day, and Graham Oceans, they said, was a runner, but I guess, you know, experience makes a lot, so they saw my horse, and they bet him down late.
Well, you come to this opportunity, and at this time of year, you know, there's not going to really not that many stake options, certainly, for the two-year-olds. And so the coming up to Saratoga, some thoughts going in, and then, you know, you mentioned some of the names between Wesley Ward and you had the pair of the Asmussens. Phil Gleaves' horses were getting tons of attention. Todd Pletcher had that good. I mean, this was a nice group of two-year-olds, and you basically go ignored, as you mentioned, 22-1. And talk about Kendrick Carmouche too. And you know, you probably had a chance to put any number of riders aboard, including having Trevor maybe come up.
Oh yeah, well Trevor's always good, but my thinking, you know, I know Kendrick was from here, but when you're young trainer starting out, nobody knew my name up in New York. So, you know, they see Brandon McFarland coming in, and, you know, the last thing I want is someone just to kind of get a feel for the horse. You know, I know he's going to try. He's going to try his hardest. He's not going to care who, you know, a lot of those guys will, you know, first, you know, take a, maybe just like a test drive on a horse, not really try as hard, but I knew he would.
Now, the trip, talk about what you were watching and some of the thoughts as it became apparent at the top of the stretch that he was traveling well.
Yeah, so he broke fast, broke pretty quick, and kind of got shuffled back a little bit. Just, you know, a couple horses around him shuffled back, and, you know, Kendrick saved ground, which was perfect. And when I saw this split, when they kind of, the 12 horse came out a little bit, I knew he had a lot of horse because I had just worked him last week, and I worked him in behind two horses, and he tipped out down the lane and just exploded. So I knew he was fit, and I knew he was could pass. So I, about the top of the lane, I said, we're going to win this race.
Not only do you win, but by mid-stretch, he was starting to widen, and only your seventh win as a trainer, and you basically, you know, you win a stake within, you know, 18 months of hanging a shingle.
Yeah, well, yeah, that was my first race running and first win, so it all came pretty quick, that part, so that was nice. I had won the day before, actually, a Laurel. I couldn't saddle him, but it was my horse that I trained, and it was a special race for me because it was my like my best friend who's been a rider, and he's been working with me for about 3 years, and it was his first race ever riding, and it was my horse that I owned and trained, and he won on him first time out.
That's Urizar Velasquez.
Yeah, yep. He worked for me for about three years. We lived together in Kentucky. We lived together in Florida. And then he came back to Maryland. And he actually got hurt, too. Of course, a baby flipped on him working for someone. And he was out for almost a year and a half. And this was his first race coming back also.
Amazing. Amazing. And this is another kind of obscure, not too obscure, but a freedom child, three-year-old. Took a while to break the maiden, but little Maryland bred, and that's tremendous. Congratulations to both. Well, what do you do now, though? 77 buyer coming out of the Skidmore, and not necessarily a horse you can think this new juvenile turf sprint without supplementing, but what other things are out there for you going forward?
The options pretty much are I could either stay here in Maryland, run the Laurel Futurity, which is 6 furlongs. That's about a month away. But I'm pretty sure, right, as of now, if everything goes to plan, we're probably going to lean towards running in Kentucky Downs. There's a 6.5 furlong. It's a $500,000 race. And for, you know, it's $250,000 and $250,000 added for Kentucky Certified, and we are. Right. So I'm thinking, and I know he's going to want more ground, so I think 6.5 might just hit him perfect right now.
Nice. Well, that. So basically, that's your Breeders' Cup. That's your Breeders' Cup Juvenile Sprint.
Oh yes, exactly. Tremendous. Yeah, that'll be the big race.
Now, Brandon, the other part of this, and I saw you. You know, you were beaming in the winner's circle, and for notoriety and for an opportunity to, you know, have people reach out to you. What do you foresee as the, you know, those side benefits to winning a stake at Saratoga?
Oh yeah, I mean, already since that race, I've already had a few people contact me about, you know, training and my day rates and this and, you know, about my plans and stuff like that. If I'm going to Florida, if I'm staying here, one guy contacted me about having a couple giant oak fillies. And, you know, I rent, you know, have him. So, yeah, it's already opened up a lot of windows.
It's tremendous. How many horses under your care now?
Right now I have 6.
Nice. Well,
the problem about Laurel is the stalls are tough to get. I could probably have some more horses, but stalls are real tight around this place.
Well, wait a minute. You had the in with Carulli and George Ann. Come on, you should be able to strong arm yourself.
And actually, about what was it? Maybe about a month ago. Well, maybe 2 months ago. They brought in a new guy. So
right.
George Ann is no longer yet.
Well, she's still vice president.
She's still there. Yeah. But you know, so but it just pretty much the young guys is kind of. You know, if I want more horses, I'll probably have to go to Pimlico to train instead of Laurel.
Interesting.
Yeah, it's tough for young people to start off around here. It really is. It's not easy.
Where do you live in terms of proximity to Anne Arundel and up toward?
I live in Howard County, which is kind of right in between. You know, right in between Laurel and Pimlico, about 25 minutes from Laurel.
So going up to Pimlico, not the ideal scenario.
It's not the worst, just because I've worked there with Dane for years, but with, you know, year round running at Laurel, it's just shipping is a pain. You know, all that kind of things is, you know, I don't mind training at Pimlico. It's just the help. There's not a lot of help there, and you know, shipping every race day. It's so nice being the Laurel.
Well, keep winning stakes, and they won't be able to say no.
Yeah, that's one way I could do it, right?
That's right. Just tell Sal, come on, I want I want a barn.
Exactly, give me a big barn.
Brandon, really was really excited for you, and looked forward to celebrating with you here, and continued success. Kentucky Downs, perfect spot, and chattel was just the only part of this story I don't like is that I didn't bet him. That's the one rub.
If I would have seen you before, I would have told you the bet. I told Gabby, I ran one Wednesday, just a cheap horse up there, just because we wanted a trailer mate, and I told Gabby, I said, I went out of my way. I said, Gabby, we're going to win Friday.
Unbelievable. did she bet? Did you talk to her?
She didn't bet it. She didn't bet. She didn't even pick me top four.
That's funny. All right. No, that's good. I can give her the business when I see her and have her on.
Oh, yeah. Give her the. She'll tell you. She'll say he came up to me and said he was going to win.
I love it. Brandon, continued success. You're on your way. Great job.
Thank you.
I love it. Brandon McFarland, and background and And now, you know, it's funny, now that he says, now that he said that about working with Carulli, the name, the dot connects. And absolutely. I'd seen his name now that I think about that. Very funny. 22 to 1, $47 on the nose. One of the best mutuals of the meet. Well, top of the hour, and we're going to talk about another different kind of long shot, which was, as it turned out, to honor and serve's stud career. Amazing. In fact, we were laughing about this last night at the dinner party, and Dr. Bisgen and Marianne and Aaron Yagoda, we were talking about the bizarre nature of stallions being exported, you know, when they, before their stud career has really, you know, had the full chance to take off. Went, sure enough, to honor and serve, sent to Korea, and 10 minutes later, he gets Mr. Freeze, and then another half hour later, he gets a grade one winner in the Alabama with Eskimo Kisses. It's like clockwork, this happens. Sid will riff on it, and then we'll look at the Travers Field and do our usual stallion discussion ahead of a big three-year-old race. Sid Fernando, Sire Watch Pedigree Focus, brought to you by Hill & Dale. Next.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
Enjoy Daily Racing Form's best value with a multi-track PP pack. Get five full-card PPs featuring the day's best racing for only $6. Each DRF multi-track PP pack features full-card DRF pass performances for the top tracks you want to play. Handicapping articles and analysis, closer looks for key tracks, and selections by DRF handicappers. Daily packs and longer plans for all budgets are available. Download full-card PPs for five of today's top tracks. Visit drf.com/multi-track today.
Pennsylvania's breeding program is truly the most lucrative in North America. Now, we'll pay a 50% breeder award for PA-sired, PA-bred maidens who run first, second, or third, with 25% for non-PA-sired, PA-breds. Last year, the number of mares bred rose by 15% in Pennsylvania. And unlike some other states, our Racehorse Development Fund can only be used to support Pennsylvania breeding and racing. This is Brian Sanfertello. Please visit us at PABred.com.
Your barn is successful. Your program is tried and true. However, there are a few horses that aren't responding in the way you'd like. Does this sound familiar? Well, let Biomedical Research Labs help change that.